Blog Talk Radio.
Brothers and sisters, welcome to Divine Truth Ministries premier radio show. Tonight we have the honor and the privilege of having Mr. Billy Roper here with us, who will be co-hosting the show today and from now on. One of the things that I would like to do first is open up with a very quick prayer, and then Mr. Roper is going to be reading the mission statement for the Divine Truth Ministries radio show. So, with that being said, our Heavenly Father, we come to you this evening in hopes that we can spread your message to the people, your people, who may be lost and are looking to be found. We pray that our words today will guide the hearts and minds of individuals listening who are fellow Christians, and even those who are not. We know that without your guidance and your protection, we are but little ants on the hill. We pray in your name that you will guide our tongues this evening as we bring your message, the message of the white Aryan race, to our fellow brothers and sisters. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Brother
Bill. Thank you, Pastor Mullett.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pastor Mullett. When you were gracious enough to invite me to be a co-host on this program, you and I actually discussed what the mission of the program should be, and we both agreed that there was a need that had not been filled within the plethora of internet radio programs that are offered by Christian Identity programs or white nationalist programs, and we wanted to address what had not been addressed and to hopefully be unifiers. And with that in mind, we wrote a mission statement, which I'd like to share for the purposes of those listening live and for those who listen to the archive broadcast. The Divine Truth Ministries Radio Mission Statement. There are a number of internet radio programs delivering one version or another of the Christian identity message, and there are several who do an excellent job serving that very useful purpose. Likewise, there are a number of internet radio programs which present non-religious, secular, white nationalist information about activism and patriotic discussion, which can be really important, have an important role to play. But this program is neither, or rather it is both. The Divine Truth Ministries radio program is a white nationalist and Christian identity outreach for our people. As such, it is for all of our people, not merely those who think of themselves as Christian identists. If this program was just aimed at the Christian identity community and excluded all others, that would be just preaching to the choir. That's not our mission. We believe that the white race represents God's chosen people. We believe that the white people of European ancestry are the descendants of the biblical Israelites and of Abraham, with whom God made a special covenant. We believe that Adam and Jesus were both white. But even within the Christian identity community, there are deep denominational and factional disagreements over single seed line or dual seed line, or whether to follow Old Testament dietary laws and feast days, and what name to call God and what day to hold church. Now, we may at times discuss those different issues, but we won't do so in a mean-spirited or exclusionary manner. Likewise, some of our listeners are Baptist or Methodist or Lutherans, Catholics, Pentecostals, or any of a dozen other Christian denominations which also have disagreements with one another. And some may consider themselves to be agnostic or have other beliefs or even feel that they are opposed to what they think Christianity is. But this program is for them, too. If you're a white person who is interested in standing up for our people, we think that you'll find something of interest in each of the Divine Truth Ministries radio shows, regardless of your personal religious views. Think of this program as a buffet of ideas from which you can take what you find appetizing and politely leave the rest behind. For almost everyone, faith is a very personal thing. It's often a journey with many twists and turns and hills and valleys along the way. Everyone at some point of time or another has doubts, and we all ask questions that seem difficult to answer. We may even change our minds on some issues from time to time as we all learn and grow. And there are many paths to the divine truth. But the nature of our people is to be contentious and individualistic. Often that's a good thing. However, continuing the buffet analogy, too many of our people seem to feel that they have to spit in the food they don't like or try to turn the buffet table over instead of taking what they like from it and leaving the rest for someone else. Remember, someone who agrees with you on 80% of the issues facing our race is not your 20% enemy. They are your 80% friend. That's why the Divine Truth Ministries radio program will not exclude any white person who is respectful and non-argumentative. Some shows may focus primarily or even nearly exclusively on non-religious, political, and social issues of concern to our racial struggle. Others may indeed discuss religion and faith. We may challenge some of your beliefs about what you believe, and we may challenge your beliefs about what you think we believe, but we will always do so in a respectful manner and ask the same for all of our listeners and guests who call in to participate. None of us want to hear Odinists calling creators names or vice versa, and for all of us, our shared blood is the most important thing. All of us love our people. All of us are searching for the divine truth. Let's show that love for our people by searching for that truth together and encourage one another. Remember, we are family. So we encourage you to call in and discuss your organization's upcoming activism, meetings, and rallies, and protests or projects. Share with us your ideas, your concerns, and your feelings on how we can work together to secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. We all can improve. We all must improve. At Divine Truth Ministries Radio, our goal is to help make the best better. Thank you for marching with us towards victory.
Wow. That's a powerful mission statement, I got to admit. That opens up a lot of avenues for a lot of people, and I like the fact that we're not going to be excluding people from, you know, conversations.
Absolutely, and that's the whole idea, is to fill the niche that exclusively Christian identity internet radio programs have not filled, and that exclusively white nationalist identity programs have not filled, but to bridge the gap, if you will, to unite them. And tonight we're going to talk about a lot of issues that will be interesting for people who are Christian identists and for people who are not.
Right. If I'm not mistaken, we have a gentleman who is on the call now who was at the Stone Mountain rally today. Is that correct?
Absolutely. The caller, just to give a little bit of background, like a lot of patriotic Americans of Southern heritage ancestry, as well as Americans throughout our nation, was concerned by the fact that Stone Mountain, Georgia, which has been an icon for Confederate patriotism because it has the giant engraving of Confederate generals and leaders in it, was being attacked by the Black Lives Matter crowd and by the liberals and anti-whites who were tabling the idea, promoting the idea of having a Martin Luther King memorial placed on the top of that monument, which was created solely to honor Confederate heroes and generals and leaders. And he helped organize some patriotic Americans to hold a flag rally today. Now, let me preface that by saying that they have been successful in forestalling, if not stopping, the measure to have a Martin Luther King monument placed on Stone Mountain, Georgia. But compromise plan, if you will, is there's been some discussion now of placing a monument to quote-unquote black Confederate soldiers there at Stone Mountain just to kind of placate the Black Lives Matter crowd. But he can tell you a lot more about that than I can. So without further ado, I will allow our caller to tell you about what happened today in Stone Mountain, Georgia. Caller, are you on the line?
It's on the table.
Compromise plan, if you will.
The caller?
There's been some discussion now of placing a monument to quote-unquote black Confederate soldiers there at Stone Mountain.
Caller?
We have some lag. Hello? Hello, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. We have a little bit of lag. I can hear myself speaking a moment ago through
right.
your speaker.
Right. I got it cut off now.
Okay. I guess there's just a little bit of lag, but I don't know if you heard my entire introduction, but I was talking about how they had wanted to place a Martin Luther King monument there at Stone Mountain. And I was there.
That's correct.
When I was just knee-high to grasshopper. I remember going there when I was a kid and going to the top of it and how wonderful an experience. You know, as a white Southerner whose ancestors fought for the Confederacy, I remember how powerful that was for me. But, of course, you know, white people around the nation, because of the attacks on the Confederate flag, are now rallying to the Confederate flag as a symbol of our people, not just our region. And you did something very patriotic and heroic today. I believe that you personally were the first one to the top of that mountain waving a Confederate flag proudly.
I was the first one. And I'm 46 years old, so it was quite an achievement.
Well, I know that before people get too upset, to show them that protests of patriotic nature do work, even when they're being discussed before they actually happen, I believe the council responsible for making the decision has tabled the idea of an MLK monument and is now trying to placate the Black Lives Matter crowd by talking about having a monument to the black Confederate soldiers. Is that correct?
Well, it's still under negotiation, let's put it that way.
Right. Well, tell us what happened there today at Stone Mountain.
Okay, well, the worst part of the whole thing was it was poorly organized. I feel that if we organize a new movement, a new event, there's no way we couldn't get 1,000+ out there. The fact that we had about 100 show up today, even though the trolls were allowed to troll the Defend Stone Mountain page freely, gives credence to that fact. So, the fact that anybody showed up, I mean, because our enemies use fear. We had people threatening to throw bear traps at us, to shoot us, to do all this crazy stuff. And the fact that we had 100 people show up, the Klan dropped out, just about everybody dropped out. Now, there were a few Klan people there, but nobody knew who they were.
Right.
And, of course, here I am, the only open skinhead in the crowd with my red laces in my boots. So, but the 3%ers, they showed out in force and they did a really good job. The security was great. I mean, there's no reason we can't have a bigger turnout, and that's really what I want to talk to you about, is because you were so successful in organizing the March Against Israel in Washington, D.C., and we really need to come together and do this. I know the winter season is about to hit, but come spring, I mean, this really is a worthy goal. This is a Confederate monument.
I understand that April the 2nd is a special day at Stone Mountain. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Just to throw it out there, you know, that would be a spring date that people could probably be rallied around. And I'm honored that you mentioned the March Against Israel in 2002. That was a long time ago. I was a lot younger then. But yet we got 1,000 white nationalists to come to the U.S. Capitol, which was the largest gathering of white nationalists at the U.S. Capitol since World War II. And I consider that to be a great success. A lot
Absolutely.
Of organizations were involved. But, you know, you mentioned having 100 there today. And to be frank with you, that is a good number considering the state of the movement, per se. I know not everyone there would probably be comfortable being considered part of our movement, but they served our purposes. But I, for example, you know, I've held demonstrations against the Mexican consulate when it opened in Little Rock, and I was the only guy that showed up. So having 100 there is really good. So I definitely understand your frustration and your disappointment that more people did not show up. But kudos to you. Congratulations to you for getting as many to show up as they did and being the first one, you know, leading from the front, being the first one at the top of that mountain. But you said that there were some three percenters, some patriots, and some people who were different fraternal members who were there, and they did not show up in their robes. They showed up in street clothes, I understand. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right.
That's correct.
And I've seen some of the newspaper pictures. There was, I guess, significant media coverage. Can you tell us about some of the media coverage which came from this?
Oh, they were all around us. And that's why it needs to be redone and organized better. Preferably coinciding with a concert like we've done other events in the past.
Right.
Because, hey, look, this could be a really big event. I'm telling you, people are catching on fire. I mean, people are fed up with this system and the way it's going. And
the great idea about using the concert is that, you know, you plan a concert with a secure venue that no one can have canceled. You get a band or two to agree to play, and then you just tell people that in order to be able to find out where the concert is and come to the concert, you have to come to the demonstration first. And you'd be surprised how effective that is, but it really has worked.
Absolutely.
Now, one thing I like
Absolutely.
About you being the media out there, because, and I'll be frank with you, that a lot of people, organizers, disagree with me on this. There are people who will not give an interview to the media because they say that, you know, the Jewish-controlled media is our enemy and we shouldn't even talk to them. But here's my take on that. And different people, you know, have different ideas. But I call it white power jujitsu, like using the strength of the enemy against himself. We don't have our own satellite TV stations or our own radio stations or TV stations or our own mass market newspapers right now, but the enemy does. However, if we can get them to carry our stories, even with a twist, even with their own liberal slant on it or their anti-white slant on it, then if we have our own websites, if we have our own social media discussion forums, then that can lead people who are sympathetic to our causes to come to us, and then we can reach them without that Jewish media filter directly. And I always have seen the controlled media as an amplifier, if you will, that we can use to get our message out there further and wider. So I've never been averse to using the media like that. I think that it's great that you did today. Now, I know that there was newspaper coverage, but there's also TV coverage too. Is that correct?
That's correct. We're waiting on it to come on. We're anxiously sitting in front of the YouTube waiting for the video coverage. So,
now would that be Atlanta Television?
That's right. That's okay. Right. It'll be Atlanta Television. And one of the marchers, I mean, they said, well, because I got to the top first. And, hey, man, I was proud. I was proud of doing it. But one of the fellow marchers, they said, you're going to be in a lot of coverage. You didn't even see them. They were all behind you taking your picture because I stood on top of the mountain waving my flag back and forth.
Actually, I've seen that picture of you from the front waving your flag
right.
when you were the first one there.
That was taken by my wife.
Right.
Who had to crawl the last bit up that mountain because it gets really steep at the end.
Well, I remember when I was a kid, you know, my legs were a lot shorter then. But I remember it seemed like quite a long ways up to the top.
Hey, it was great exercise, man. I feel great afterwards. I probably won't tomorrow, but
Well, I know that you're stoked, you know, psychologically and emotionally because of the victory you achieved, and there's no other word for what you did today. It was a victory, and I really want to express my congratulations, but also my gratitude as a white Southerner for what you guys did today. And, you know, like I said, you know, every single one of my male ancestors fought for the Confederacy, and more than one died for it. But even those who are not Southern-born and bred, I think have really developed an attachment, an emotional attachment to the Confederate flag, because you know, it's kind of like if you think about the Revolutionary War. At first, the British soldiers used that song Yankee Doodle Dandy to make fun of the colonials. It was like a put-down because they didn't know fashion. But then
right.
The colonists kind of took that song and called themselves Yankees and defeated the British. Kind of the way that the attack on the Confederate flag has worked for us. It's mobilized so many people against governmental oppression and in favor of not only Southern rights, not only Confederate heritage, but white rights. And what was a regional symbol has now become a national symbol of white pride. And people in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and Nova Scotia, and Chicago, and Detroit, white people all over the nation now see that flag as a symbol of white pride. Even people in foreign countries do. And so
that's just what your thought there. I had a guy that walked up the mountain with me from he traveled all the way from Detroit, Michigan,
right
down here to come to this rally. And that's why I think it's such a shame that the numbers were so low. If it was better organized, I mean, they even lied to us which parking lot to go to inside of the park at the gate, trying to throw a wrench into things. And we had a lot of people that missed the event that came, that actually showed up the park because they didn't know where to meet anybody. And it was poorly organized, is all I'm saying.
Well, John, not to mean to interrupt here, gentlemen, but they had also done that with the rally that we had in Washington, D.C., not that long ago, where we were told to meet at one place, and then it ended up being an entirely different place, and nobody showed up. We ended up having a handful of people show up, and then some of them even left the stage area because it was poorly organized, and we, you know, didn't have an opportunity to have our voices heard. We were even asked by the police department to remove our flags from our flagpoles, as we were not allowed to have any flagpoles over 3 feet tall, which they did not inform us of this when we came to the rally. And ended up having about 20 people walk off because, we're there to defend our flag. We're there to defend the Confederate flag, and we're told by the people who put it on to go ahead and lower our flags to appease the police department in Washington, D.C. Well, I'm sorry. If I'm there to defend a flag, I'm not going to lower it.
Exactly. That's
right.
I guess the whole point, wouldn't it? Well, let me ask you a question. What you did today was wonderful. I understand your desire to make it even bigger and better next time, and I'll definitely do my part to help you promote it and advertise it, to build it. I think it's a very, very worthy cause. That place is more than just symbolic. It's a potential rallying point that is nationally known. And I'm not trying to at all dictate what date you should set, but think about April the 2nd, you know, as being a potential date, the Confederate Memorial Day. And if you think of something else that might be better for people's schedules, I'll roll with that, whatever you can, you know, call the shots on this. But in between now and then, if you would like to get in touch with me, we can talk it over and begin promoting. One of the first things that would need to be done would be to establish a contact person. And if you're willing to, you know, be the first person out of the trenches once again and lead it once again, then you might decide the best way that you would like to establish yourself as a contact point, whether it is to use yours or to create a different email address or whatever. and then we can begin to organize and to promote something that would be even bigger and better than what happened today.
Absolutely. I'm all about it.
Okay, well, we have the winter to think about it and to begin promoting it and advertising it. But now you and I are in touch on Zuckerberg's Facebook. So we can talk about it a lot more. But I'm also going to type in my email address for you and for whomever else might be listening, so that if sometimes it happens that my Facebook account gets deleted, I have no idea why, because I'm a pretty nice guy. But it happens.
Yeah.
If that were to happen again, I want you to still be able to stay in touch with me. And so
okay. We'll
work together, and you can decide for yourself, you know, how much you want to be out front in this, and I will be happy to help you promote it, and I'm sure that Pastor Mullet will as well.
Great.
Yes, sir. We'll gladly do that.
Hey, y'all got my number now, right?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Well, you know how to contact me.
Absolutely, we certainly do.
Give me a call and we'll add each other to our phones.
Sounds good. I don't have a cell phone. I just have a landline right now.
That's fine. That's fine.
But I've got your
number. I don't blame you, Billy.
And, yeah, I know. I'm kind of old-fashioned and paranoid.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
But let's stay
but
in
I'm
touch
I'm already
sure.
on every list they got, so it doesn't matter to me, so...
I know what you mean. Our name is probably side by side, unless it's alphabetical order. But we'll stay
Whatever.
In touch and talk throughout the winter and organize this, and we can talk about it a lot more. This is something we can build on, and if you'd like to call in next week or the week after or whenever and talk about the plans some more, I'm sure we'd be happy to have you on again.
Sounds great.
Yes, sir.
Thank you again for calling, and thank you for your patriotism today. We appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, John, for what you did today, and thanks for the report from the Stone Mountain, Georgia rally
today. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Good night.
Billy, I have a special request here. This is a prayer request that came through from the Soldiers of God Ministries based in West Virginia. And I would like to take a moment here really fast to put this out there and to make sure that this is put onto everybody's prayer requests. But at this time, Divine Truth Ministries would like to ask that everyone listening tonight take a moment to please remember fellow white racial warrior Gary Delp, who recently suffered horrendous crippling injuries received from a gunshot wound to the back and is now in the process of healing and recovering at a VA rehabilitation center. Please pray that Almighty Yahweh, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, our one and only true God, will comfort, strengthen, and heal Brother Delp, and also send comfort and strength to his wife Becky and their family during this traumatic time. Your prayers on their behalf would be very much appreciated. Thank you. And just to give a little bit of background, Mr. Delp lost his son two or three months ago as well, so that family really needs the uplifting of Yahweh from each and every person that's listening tonight or in the future on the Divine Truth page, where you can get the episode and listen to it at any time. So I just wanted to bring that to everybody's attention to please pray for Mr. Delp and his family. Last I heard was that he was paralyzed. I do not believe that the paralysis will stay or be lifelong. I believe that there's a good possibility that he could recover from that, but it's going to be a long, hard road.
Sounds horrible.
So let's just keep
now,
yep.
The details of the situation, I understand we probably don't want to discuss too much. This is probably an
Correct.
Ongoing investigation and issue, but our prayers certainly go out to this fellow white racial patriot who, I'll just say this, was shot in the back, because that's how enemies attack.
Yep. There was Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that was going on with that that we really can't discuss. So that would be something more for, you know, a private conversation. But please, folks, you know, this is a fellow racial warrior who's been around the movement for quite some time. And he really needs, you know, and especially his family. I mean, they just lost their son a couple of months ago, and now they're dealing with this as well. You know, let's just keep him in our prayers because we
Pastor
know.
Pastor Mo, I'd like to recommend something.
Sure.
You and I have a lot of contacts, and I think that I would like to, with your help and your guidance, organize some kind of help for that family, whether it turns out to be a raffle or some other kind of fundraiser, some way of helping the family. You and I both know what medical expenses can be like.
Yes.
And to consider what they've already been through with their previous loss and then this, since you're already in contact with the people involved, would you mind getting in touch with them and ask what kind of need the family might have, and then we can maybe next week discuss organizing some raffle or fundraiser to help out the family?
You know, I think that would be an excellent idea. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe there's an individual that's on our call. I don't think he wants to talk this evening, but who is aware of this. So I will reach out to them and figure out what we can do. I don't know what we can do, but I would, you know, suggest maybe a raffle offering, you know, a couple of your books, some material from the ministry here to go with it, and some things like that. I think, you know, this would show camaraderie between the organizations and or the churches and really go to help this family. And I know that the Delps would be forever grateful for any help that we could do. So I think that's
well, also tomorrow night on actually a talk show program called Patriotic Front Radio. They promote the hashtag White Lives Matter. And they're always telling people that they should give donations to charities and fundraisers in their town, their community. And if they're not publicly known like I am in the community, so people can't just tell that, oh, you know, there's a racist, then they should do something subtle like put a piece of paper saying hashtag White Lives Matter or hashtag Stop White Genocide in with their donation, whether it's used clothes or shoes that they donate to a homeless shelter or to a charity or a thrift store, or whether it's donating canned goods, whatever it is. They would do something subtle like that to kind of undo the negative stereotypes of us that some people in our own communities have of us. So we're the good guys once again. We're not just doing it because we want to change people's perceptions, but it's a good side effect. It's also good to help, especially this time of year. But
yes, it is.
They would definitely get behind this too. They definitely, yeah. The Patriotic Front Radio staff, Ken and Sarah and Travis, and they would definitely help out too. So if you can get that information together, I know that we can get a lot of people behind helping out the family.
I know we can too. Yeah, I think that's an excellent idea. I'll discuss this with the individuals and maybe give you a call sometime tomorrow and we can discuss a little bit further. That way we can get ourselves set up for the next radio show to announce what we're going to be doing.
Sounds good.
And if anybody here has any suggestions that's on the radio show, you're more than welcome to, you know, put in your two cents as well on that. Now, Billy, I noticed that we have another caller. I'm going to try this call screen again. I think I got it figured out. So while I'm doing that, could you possibly go into, because I know you personally, I've known you for a very long time. I have known many of the groups that you've been involved with, and you know, I know that at one time, you know, you had lost your way, so to speak, and I think you know, you came back and you found it. Can you go into a little bit on your coming to the light with Yahweh again and bringing in the what brought you back into your religious finding?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's probably influenced a lot of what my input was into the mission statement, because I'm a person who is talking to everyone right now from the perspective of having been down that road. I have, at different times in my life, considered myself, I dabbled in Odinism and Asatru. I dabbled in creativity. For many years, I considered myself to be an agnostic. And here's how that happened. Basically, I was raised in a racially conscious family. Very fortunate in that. From the moment I was born, I was taught to know my colors. And I'm very grateful for that. But I was also raised in a mainstream Judeo-Christian Southern Baptist church. And so I was taught the truth about blacks and Mexicans and Asians, but there was this cognitive dissonance, this disconnect where it came to the Jews, because we were also taught that the Jews were God's chosen people and you can't criticize them collectively, because, you know, God will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee, that kind of thing. Because of the misunderstanding of who the Jews are and were, I was taught that the Jews cannot be criticized. And as I became a teenager, I looked around, and Pastor Mullen, I saw the hypocrisy in the world. I saw who it was that was promoting the homosexual agenda, predominantly Jews. I saw who was promoting feminism, who was promoting pornography, who was promoting open borders, who was promoting race mixing, who was promoting everything that I knew was destroying my nation and my people. And I saw overwhelmingly that it was Jews. And I could not answer the question within myself of how a people could be so evil and work on the side of Satan and yet still be God's chosen people. And why we weren't allowed to criticize evil if evil was done by Jews. And so that caused me, because of that hypocrisy I observed, to lose faith, to backslide, to become agnostic, if you will. And so, you know, like a lot of people, when I lost my moorings, I began to cast about for something else, you know, something else to believe in spiritually. My racial views never changed, never slipped. You know, I never thought that we were all equal. I never thought that, you know, blacks and Mexicans and Asians were my equal or that I wanted to have anything to do with them. I was always a racialist, but I was not a Christian in my heart for many years, even after spending my first 16 years in the church. What turned me around was spending time with Pastor Butler, traveling from place to place with him, doing demonstrations and protests and rallies from the deserts of Arizona to the SPLC building in Montgomery, and just spending time with him and talking to him. And he had a welcoming nature, a gracious heart, an open, loving heart. And he did not see me as, you know, Billy Roper, the evil, secular, racist Nazi. He saw me as his fellow Israelite brother who just didn't know who he was, who just did not have an awareness of his identity. And I talk about this a lot in my book, The Ice Path, which is kind of autobiographical, because, you know, with the way things are, you never know how old you're going to get in this thing of ours. So I didn't know if I would have time to write my autobiography before I kicked off or not. So I decided to write early. So The Ice Path is an autobiography, but a lot of it talks about my return to faith, and a lot of it can be credited to Pastor Butler's generosity of spirit to me. And also, I, you know, learned a lot from other people, including yourself and Pastor Thomas Robb, who helped me to regain my faith. And I give credit to those people who never lost it, but I had to lose it to get it back the roundabout way. And so I sit here tonight really being able to understand the perspective of people who are Odinist or creators or agnostic, who are either ambivalent towards or even hostile towards Christianity, because They literally don't understand. They do not know. And if you remember what Jesus said as he went through his final torment, as he was there hanging on the cross, dying, he said, "Father, forgive them, before that they know not what they do." And if we're supposed to try to be Christ-like and follow his example, then I think that I've tried to be more open to dialogue and friendly to Odinists or creators. Like Matt Hill is a friend of mine, and I'm helping out with his second book like I did with his first. And he and I argue and fuss and joke about religion all the time. But it has nothing to do with my respect for the man or his work for our people. So I think that if we really want to be Christ-like, you know, you're really born with two things in the world. You're born with your gender identity, male or female, and you're born with your genetics, your race. And if you don't betray one of those, if you don't become a homosexual or a race mixer, then anything else you can come back from, I really believe. So my way back took a long time, took years. I can really, from my perspective, respectfully dialogue with those who are still on that road. Whether they ever end up the same place that I am or not, I can really understand where they're coming from. I can understand where they are. And that really influenced me to write my part of the mission statement for the radio program. And that's why I really wanted to make this a program that would be welcoming for people who did not consider themselves Christians and had really no idea what Christian identity was about.
Now, brother, with you saying with the statement, and one of the things that I think we should touch on again really fast with that, especially for people who are coming in, you know, to the show now, our radio show is basically a one-of-a-kind radio show. This is, we're hoping, will be a new foundation for other people and other shows to do, because we're not just going to do Christianity or Christian identity conversations. I'm sure that there'll be times where we may have a World Church of the Creator person that comes on, or an Odinist, or, you know, maybe even an atheist. And we're going to leave it open because we both feel that, and if I'm misspeaking here on this, please let me know, but I think we both feel that for me personally and you, Yahweh is most important in our lives. But we also have to have a common cause for everybody, and that's the color of our skin. We need to open up avenues for everybody to communicate and know that you're not going to be kicked off of the show unless you blatantly attack, a particular sect of Christian identity, or, you know, this organization or that organization. You know, I hate to use the word, but we're being politically correct, but we're not being politically correct because we're giving an avenue for all white nationalists, whatever affiliation they are, to come in and express their views and opinions and points and get their rallies out there, get their, you know, organizational name out there, and to help bring together a cohesive radio show where we don't have to worry about this person attacking this person because this person believes that. Am I correct?
Right, and
in
I
that?
Have to give, absolutely, and I have to give the, I don't want anyone to think that, oh, you know, he's trying to say he has some revolutionary idea. You know, you and I have discussed it before, but that's exactly what Pastor Butler did for me. And had he not, I would probably in all likelihood still be an agnostic today, because I would see it as something exclusionary and never would have understood. And he did so. I still remember, and I talk about this in the Ice Bath, quite a, I have a few pages about this. We were on the way to Montgomery to have a protest at the SPLC offices, and we stopped at a Denny's restaurant. And so it's me and Pastor Bowler and maybe, you know, about half Aryan Nation guys and some other people, skinheads, and everybody went to the breakfast buffet line. And I, being me and not knowing any better, got a big rack of bacon, you know, and was chowing down and enjoying it. And I was sitting right next to Pastor Butler with my big rack. I sat down and put my plate down, and the whole table went quiet. Everybody's looking at me. And so I'm thinking, okay, I went to the bathroom a few minutes ago. Did I forget to zip back up? You know, what's going on? It was the bacon. And so, you know, started this conversation, and somebody said something, you know, that not supposed to eat bacon. Now, I'll be honest with you that I personally believe that what he said is correct. But here's what Pastor Butler said. He said that the Old Testament dietary laws were created because back then people didn't know that you have to cook pork thoroughly or you can get trichinosis, which are little microscopic worms that live in pork. And that's what kills them, is cooking them thoroughly. But as a health law, to keep people from getting sick from eating undercooked pork, you just obey the dietary law, don't eat pork. And if you look at the food that's forbidden, you know, like catfish, snails, they're all bottom feeders or scavengers that technically, if you don't cook them correctly, could make you sick. So he said those were just dietary laws and suggestions for health, but that it's not like it's a cardinal sin that you're going to go to hell for. And so that was like the first time, I think, that someone who has Christian identity presented their beliefs to me in a logical and rational way that made sense to what I consider myself to have a little bit of a scientific mind. And that was an opening for me. It really opened up my heart. And so, you know, if we can do the same thing that Pastor Butler did in our own way and be open to people, you know, we are told that we're supposed to share our message. And you can't share your message to the people who are the only people who can receive it, which are white people, if you tell them that they're serving Satan and they're going to go to hell.
Right.
The only way that you can get your message across and spread your message, if you have any desire to, is to be open to them and to not change your beliefs or your values, but to explain rationally and logically and calmly and lovingly why you believe what you do and why perhaps their misconceptions about Christian identity are wrong. And if we can do that the way that he did, I think we can have the same kind of success that he did.
I think so, too. You know, and a lot of people out there know, or actually may not even know, is that's how I came to Christian identity was through the Church of Jesus Christ of Christian Aryan Nations in Idaho as well. Billy, I noticed on our timer here, we've only got about 12 minutes left. Now, I know that there's been a lot of talk recently about a terrorist event in France, and I believe that you wanted to have some time to discuss that this evening. And like I said, we got about 12 minutes. So if you can, why don't you let us know what's going on there? You know, maybe there is somebody out there who hasn't, you know, realized what had happened yet. And give us a little bit of background on what's going on over there, if you could.
Absolutely. Well, we all know that this Muslim invasion of refugees, as they call themselves, into Europe is a kind of a two-time loser thing because they are non-whites and they are also anti-Christian. So for us, it's an easy call. If they were, you know, Nordic Muslims, they would still be harmful to European culture and values. And if they were, you know, not white Muslims, but rather if they were Christians from Ethiopia or North Africa, you know, that would still be a problem for European genetics and DNA and culture. But the fact that they are both non-white and non-Christian is just two-time losers. Now, what happened, of course, this last week, ISIS has been ramping up their attacks. And I really think that Russia inadvertently is responsible for this, not in a bad way. I'm not slamming Russia. I wish that we had a president like they do. But Russia's attacks in Syria against ISIS have really pushed them back, have pushed back ISIS. And so seeing that they were losing on the ground internally, ISIS began to change their tactics and try to focus their attacks externally, because they've now stated that their goal is to draw in Western military forces into Syria where they can fight them on the ground and turn the public, the American public, the British public, the French public, against the war by having body bags come back from Syria. And so they're trying to lure us into a ground war campaign against them in Syria, because Russia is just decimating them from the air. So the way they started doing that, well, of course, they blew up a Russian passenger jet that was going from a resort in Egypt back to St. Petersburg and killed 224 Russians, trying to draw Russia in. And then they had two suicide bombers 2 days ago in Beirut that killed hundreds of people. They were ISIS. And then, of course, yesterday, there was the horrific attack in Paris, where at least 8 different ISIS attackers and 3 different teams attacked 7 or 8 different places almost simultaneously within the space of 1 hour. And they included a theater where an American death metal band was playing and a soccer stadium that a game was going on, and 2 or 3 cafes and restaurants. Now, currently, the death toll is around 130, but there are 300 people still in the hospital, 80 of them in intensive care, which means that there will probably be more fatalities that will be added to the list of dead. That's a huge blow to Paris, especially since it was just back in January when the Muslims attacked the satirical newspaper there, the Charlie Hebdo newspaper. They hadn't really even gotten over that. But some people could say that the French have done this to themselves by allowing in so many Muslims. You know, France right now is 7.5% Muslim, and these are foreign-born Muslims. At least 2 of the attackers yesterday came to Europe through Greece as Syrian refugees. Now, this is important to us, not just because France is our white brothers and sisters and fellow Europeans, but because historically France was the first nation to help us gain our independence against the British, and because of their contributions to our culture. But France has a real serious problem now. They are embroiled in North and Western Africa against Muslims there and the former French colonies, and they're trying to draw them into Syria. But ultimately, with 7.5% of the French population now being foreign-born Muslims, it's hundreds of thousands of them, and there are many areas of Paris and of Calais where they actually burned one of the refugee centers in response last night. I was glad to see.
Yep.
There are no-go zones where Sharia law rules, where white French men and women are not even allowed to go anymore. And that's a direct result of open borders and multiculturalism, and Jews primarily pushing for those open borders and multiculturalism. And, you know, it's the group adaptive survival instinct of the Jews to always undermine the majority and the homogeneity of any nation they parasitically infest. And at least on one level, it's to protect themselves, to make sure that there is no homogeneous group on top, so they won't be singled out as the only outsider. But on another level, of course, you and I both know that they're just inherently evil.
Mm-hmm.
Of their father, the
Correct.
Devil. So
Correct.
The Jews have promoted these open borders to destroy Europe actively, and they don't even try to hide it. Now, the result of that, of course, has been attacks like you see in Paris, and don't think that that's the end of it. But it's had some good results, too. I got an email from a Polish reporter who had interviewed me in person a few months back, and she was asking me about a new election they'd have of the Polish parliament, that one of the new guys had actually used his fingers on his chest to show a secret Klan sign when he was sworn in. She was asking me about that. So in Poland, in Eastern Europe, the Slavs have really ramped up their patriotism. They had 50,000 nationalists rally in the streets against the refugees. 50,000. Tens of thousands in Germany. And so we really see an awakening of our brothers and sisters in Europe. Despite hate speech laws, despite being sent to prison for being politically incorrect and being fined and losing their jobs, much worse than anything we could imagine facing here, they're still standing up. It separated the men from the boys and made their movements a lot more serious. So, you know, with the Beirut suicide attacks and the downing of that Russian airliner and the Paris attacks of yesterday, we have to be concerned also in America, because 10,000 of those Syrian refugees just arrived today in New Orleans. Now,
great.
Here where I live, in the middle of the country, in the Ozarks, there's two places within a two-hour drive from me, Springdale, Arkansas, and Springfield, Missouri, where 2,500 Syrian refugees are coming to each of those places. And I challenge everyone listening to go online. You can do a web search and find out the city nearest you where Syrian refugees are being brought. And since we already know that at least some of those attackers in Paris yesterday were those Syrian refugees, then we can just take it for granted. They don't even have to slip under the border pretending to be Mexicans anymore. We literally are bringing them in, bringing in potential terrorists here, you know. But the good thing is, and this is going to take a little bit of a mental leap for some people to understand, I would rather a non-white Muslim try to attack me, try to kill me, than try to give me a hug. Because when people see their brothers and sisters getting attacked, either literally or figuratively, that awakens them. It creates a response, a reaction, and they fight back. But it's the lovey-dovey, the multi-culti, the hugging and singing kumbaya, which is more destructive to our race and our nation than a fight. We always do good in a fight. You know, it's when they try to love us, that's when our weakness comes out, our too much sympathy for the underdog. So really, if they want to attack us, that would, in the long run, only awaken us and be against their best interest. But once again, our enemies are not so smart. We give them too much credit.
Right.
So it's happening now in Paris. It could happen tomorrow or next year here in the United States. But we really see what may be the beginning of a huge culture clash, a third world war. And if they want to bring it, they can bring it.
Well, it's inevitable. I mean, it's going to happen here. I don't think it's too far down the pipeline. And I also think that this is Yahweh's trying to tell us, hey, you better start bucking up. I'm getting ready to put my feet on the earth and take my brothers and sisters home so we can fight a war. Everybody needs to be prepared for it. It's going to be here. And the only way that Obama can stay in office is by declaring martial law.
It could happen. It could.
Yes,
the funny thing is, you know, in the Haste of the Day trilogy, I wrote about the rise of ISIS and had them conquering what they call the Levant, the area of Turkey and Syria and Iraq that they are trying to occupy now. And they actually have really stepped up their ground game. The only thing that's really pushed them back has been the Russian airstrikes. But they really have changed tactics now with doing the external attacks. And I agree with you. I think we're going to see a lot more of it, and probably not too far in the future.
I agree. All right, folks. I just had a little woman in my ear telling me we had 90 seconds. So what we're going to do now is reiterate that we'll be back on again next week at the same time and the same station. We'll be promoting it throughout the week. And Billy, I'll be calling you here in about 5 minutes to discuss some things that we had discussed on the show. Everybody, thank you for coming and joining the conversation. For those who are on here who are Christian Identity, don't worry. We will be talking about Christian Identity stuff in the near future. I want to thank Billy Roper for being the co-host of the show. I also want to thank each one of our listeners who are out there and everybody who participated. With that being said, the only thing I have to say is onward, Christian soldier.